Oh, you brave soul. Welcome to episode 100 of Tryhards, an episode that we intend to be not only a celebration of friendship, but of the game we love. And we want to start it with a look back at the previous 99 episodes. So enjoy the clip montage, and I'll see you on the other side, along with Matt and Brian, and our glasses will be full. We hope yours will be, too, for this celebration of Tryhards.
I feel kind of like Brian, where I've brought nothing to the show.
So they would read the card, wrinkle their nose, look at me, and then read the card again.
Early, you can fight me on that if you want to.
Basically, he lit the store on fire, stole it, and then ran out cackling like a Hamburglar.
I already feel like I know you inside out. I don't want to have to prove it.
99 problems and 02 ain't one.
Please don't axe murder me and dump my body somewhere.
Domestic Matt is sexiest Matt. Salty Matt is best Matt.
That's just me as the old man sitting on my front porch telling Gideon to get off my lawn.
I was the only one on the team who, before the event started, got a nice compliment and a pep talk.
I was about to throw up in my mouth. I think I might have a little bit.
Well, there goes the tryhard's chances of getting a preview card ever.
I try not to play Commander with people I like.
Do you know how hard it is to find a manipulate fate between three vendors in the entire room?
Now, it could be because our research department is fueled by booze.
I took a semester of Sanskrit.
And it was just a giant magic nerd fest all day on Memorial Day.
And if she's already getting salty over game states, she's well on her way to being a magic player.
I thought this was a freaking joke.
2-1, Hurley, you lose.
How in the hell have you made it this far in your life as a nerd without being able to shuffle?
I'll go ahead and break my spicy tech today.
Sean's gonna be like, no, play that. And I'll be like, don't listen to him.
Why in the hell do they keep making such powerful white cards?
Why play Magic when you could play Pack Rat?
I'll confirm that with my good friend Marcio Carvalho here sometime soon.
It's like catering to a child. You can't always give them exactly what they ask for.
But then the conspiracy theories start to come out.
Change is hard for old people.
I might fly out to WotC and just hold a picket sign.
You can take nerds outside for value.
I think I'm really good at losing games. I'm really bad at winning games.
Being able to play Wednesday and go 0-4, I felt great about my play.
Any format where you can run Shadow of Doubt's a great format.
I'm just trying to put them in alphabetical order by color.
Don't worry, Brian. That sweet, sweet Gideon backside, it's indestructible.
That's your gateway drug is through the digital arena.
He's not doing anything wrong. He's doing everything right.
We are actually impeding you from becoming a better Magic player.
Now I'm going to have to take a break from my game just so I can come over and watch it.
What am I going to do now? My opponent doesn't have any permits on the battlefield. How am I supposed to win this game?
When two cards love each other very much.
I don't think the God Hand exists with Fu Chang.
Just go confident, man. Go confident into that dark night.
Alcoholics version of the Island of Dr. Moreau.
That's what happens when I'm old and fat, I guess.
Hurley should have been drafted in the NFL as a kicker.
I want to thank all my adoring fans.
If I could just get Magic players to push in their chairs when they get up for a round, I'd have everything I want.
It's kind of energized the group.
I put her on the couch, gave her some Chinese food and some egg drop soup, and left the house.
Oh my God.
Uncontrolled. Unlistenable.
It's gotta be on that Urban Dictionary.
I had the curse of the Sean going on.
I don't take pleasure in my opponent looking kind of forlorn, but at the same time, you know you're doing something right when that happens.
We meld into one very mediocre podcast when you flip us all over.
God, why is Tibbet so bad at Magic?
We'll let you score that on your home tryhard bingo card.
It's kind of like Santa just left a big old turd at the bottom of my chimney.
He goes, did you not force that? I go, I didn't force it because I'm an idiot. He goes, okay.
Nerd alert! Nerd alert!
Putting five Evander Holyfields into the ring and seeing who wins.
The old man in me got the better of it.
The question is kind of like asking you to date your ex-girlfriend.
And I think I might be growing into a bit of a fun hater.
But it's not Bob Marr. But it's not Bob Marr. But it's not Bob Marr.
100% incorrect.
If you would have seen some of the people who were perusing his garage sale, you would have needed a drink too.
That's the thing that my Magic nightmares are made of right there.
High school formats don't translate well to viewership on Twitch.
Nobody loves all of this show at any point.
I think we were just getting outclassed.
That deck is a solid 49% deck against the field.
This is a Matt Hurley conspiracy theorist right here.
Because I have a strict no public masturbation policy.
Captains of industry, titans of the industrial world.
That's a skill we absolutely have to develop as legacy players.
You just don't want to be stuck at the end of the dark alley being like, oh man, but this card is really cool and I really wish I could use it.
And I'm worried that if gold pros are considered trash, what about the rest of us who are trash?
There's steps there that should be taken before you level up.
Playing in penny sleeves, he's like, oh my gosh, I brought my 72 card
vampire deck.
All of my negligible play skill had to be brought to bear to win game one.
I'll be the shoulder you can cry on after you get crushed by Gaea's Cradle.
I think we're ignoring one important factor about this, though.
We're not very good at this game.
What beyond that?
It doesn't matter that these are the best players in the world because I don't know the intricacies of the game.
And then in the next round, I cut my finger and bled on Kibler's legacy deck.
So I'm actually starting to get a little bit hyped about this.
The better the art, the more unplayable the card.
There's certain people I'll answer the phone in the beer aisle, and there's certain times it just doesn't get answered at all.
Hey, no matter what happens, somebody has to be the little spoon.
Both of you shut your mouth because I have 6 HD DVD players in my closet in case my one breaks because I have about 200 movies on HD DVD.
My experiences playing with each of you are vastly different.
I'm going to try to prove everybody wrong.
Hey, don't you remember when we made that bet?
I thought Tom Brady had given up his Uggs. I thought that, you know, Matt Hurley was, you know, weighed 150 pounds. I thought, like, the world was
none
ending.
Of that happened.
The velvet rope is just kind of clipped in front of me.
We are no strangers to suboptimal choices here on Tryhards.
I'm not getting into that because I just sound hateful.
He was at least part of the cocktail of inspiration.
We don't like something, we're just going to cry until Wizards changes its mind.
If hyperbole needed a hype man, it would be Evan Irwin.
Is it just me, or is it really hard for you guys just to put on pants and go to F&M?
Hey, wait, that's an oxymoron. You can't have sweet mud lists.
I could have been living in a dumpster out back, and I still would have been the happiest homeless man alive.
Now that you have everyone sort of lathered up into a frenzy of foreplay.
Into the back room where the magic happens.
I know Merfolk players basically had a heart attack.
If you're an upstart heathen with no taste, then sure.
I think Maru's guest got an alert that Cobblade was mentioned on a podcast.
And it is time once again to embarrass ourselves.
I did what I do now. I annoyed the living crap out of people with it.
You can only have your heart broken so many times. Yeah, find a new donkey to ride to work in the morning. I'm done.
It's an 11 out of 10, 9 times out of 10.
I am definitely not using these two results to start my bookie business, calling lines on Pro Tour, but hey, if it happens a third time, who knows?
I think people would pull out the pitchforks and set the world on fire.
And insert your own favorite noise for failure here.
I like to bring up the mistakes that I make.
Why doesn't somebody pay for us to, like, you know, do some research on this? Pay for our hotel and some beer for a weekend, guys. I think we could get this done.
We're certainly too lazy for that.
I'm 35 years old. If I had the ability to learn it, I would have done that already.
This is just the stuff dreams are made of.
Because much like the Spanish Inquisition, everybody expects it now, so I can't run it back again.
Obviously, I'm going to build the biggest troll deck I can find.
And he's just impeccably dressed, man. Every time I see him, I'm like, wow, just looking sharp.
They both look sexy as hell.
Jaws dropped open when I did this.
And I'm glad I wasn't there to throw up a little bit in my mouth when that happened.
I am one of the cheaper people you will ever meet. I'm a cheapskate. You guys know this. Yep. The listeners
yep.
know this.
This is true. It turns out that there's a couple people in the area who are rage buying all of the Graft Diggers cages from local stores.
Greedy in Magic is my default setting.
This game is fun. No matter how you slice it, this game is fun.
Please don't be sheep. Don't say, oh, I need that card, and reward that behavior.
You jerk. I can't believe you brought that up. That's just...
That's a whole different nipple game.
Hey, middle finger to blue for a couple sets.
We all kind of have this area of almost shameful expertise that we rule over.
It's up to us, the old men, to figure out how to break that.
It's not just because somebody brings you pancakes when you're drunk.
14-year-old me was just the happiest camper alive after that.
Send me the belt. I win. Fly me to Renton. I'm now an employee. Put me where you need me.
I didn't know it was possible to get jet lag moving from one time zone to another here on the mainland.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to give it a hopeful 7 right now.
No, I'm just going to copy and paste that answer from Brian when we come to the last episode of this show.
The more I talk, the more it sounds bad. Sorry, Hurley.
We can't talk about that because I might drive over to Sean's house and murder him.
Those were some of our best moments. Okay, also some of our worst. Hope you enjoyed that clip look at the first 99 episodes of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Oh, you brave soul. Thank you for joining us for this celebration of 100, and as we set out to embark on our next 100 episodes here on Tryhards. Something we haven't done for a while is remind ourselves of why we're here and why we do this cast. Brian, we came up with a mission statement when we started Tryhards. Refresh our memories.
Full-time adults, part-time Magic players, let's serve as ambassadors to the game.
I think it still holds true. I think we try to do that on a week-by-week basis. Some weeks are better than others, obviously. And guys playing the role of full-time adult better than anybody, this guy right here.
We'll jump into our celebration throughout the episode here this evening. Things that we've loved from the cast, things that we've loved interacting with you about. And as part of the challenge of episode 100 tonight, we've each designed a magic card or a mechanic or a theme that we would like to see Magic incorporate going forward. And yes, these are in the communal space, free. Maru, go ahead, write them down. All we ask is that when you reproduce one of these, we get it as our preview card in the set that it's in. Let's jump right into it. Guys, what are you drinking tonight as we celebrate episode 100 of Tryhards? Matt, you're coming off the Derby weekend in Derbytown. Do you even have the appetite for more booze at this point?
Not really, if you want to know the honest truth. I'm actually having some scotch. I took a bottle of scotch over to our Derby party, but never actually finished it. I had a decent amount on Saturday, so I'm just having a 12-year scotch, the one you guys made fun of that, you know, comes in a handle.
I'm jumping into Recess Brewing's Elder Gold. It's an Imperial Gold Ale with elderberries and peaches. I have not had this one from Recess yet, and it's off to a good note to get started. They make the Old Man bourbon barrel aged that I really like. They make the Ninja Clown that I'm actually afraid to get. It's like a double Belgian, and I'm not a huge Belgian fan, but the artwork on the label looks so amazing that I'll end up trying it sooner rather than later. So the Elder Gold here in the studio for tonight. Brian, what do you got in the glass?
Elysian Space Dust IPA, one of the bigger IPAs that I will drink. It's so good. It's like 8.2%, but when you're drinking it, you have no idea until you've had like three, and then you're like, why is the wall a little swirly all of a sudden?
The establishment that hosts the coaches show that I co-host on a weekly basis has the Space Dust on tap, so that's what we have after the show. And yeah, you get the 30-ounce one, you feel pretty good by the time it's time to pack up the gear and roll home. So be careful in your basement, Brian. Guys, what Magic did you play? Brian, I know you've been busy. Did you have time to play Magic this week?
I did not have time to play Magic. I did have somebody who was playing in a PPTQ come over, and we talked deck choices, card choices for a little while. So I felt like I had a say in some decks that, you know, were being played and whatnot. So did what I always do, loan cards. Cards sitting here don't do me any good, so can they do somebody else some good? That's what I wanted to do. And it didn't turn out real well for those members of the Shark Tank, but hey, we gave it the old college try. So no, did not get to play any Magic this week, unfortunately, with the kids' soccer schedules and being in full swing and other things going on around the house. So hopefully a couple of you did have some time to get to some paper cards. Hurley, what about you? Did you have time to sling some cardboard in between watching all the ponies run down the dirt track?
On Oaks Day, which was Friday, both of us were extremely hungover. I still had to work. Our local office was closed, but all the other branches were open, so I still had to work. One of my friends said, let's go play Magic, and I was like, okay. I was not in any shape whatsoever to go play Magic. I did anyways. I took the Bug Value Town deck that Sean so much hates. Was okay with it, but I made a lot of play mistakes. Muldrotha was not good in that deck. Let me just say it right now. And I was so tired that and hungover that the friend of mine that I went with, he drafted. I drove and he rode with me. I was actually putting my stuff in my car and I go, why do I have to talk to Ben about something? So I walk back inside. I'm like, what do I have to talk to you about something? He goes, I don't know. He's like, you about ready to leave? I was like, oh, yeah, you rode with me. So I almost left without him. That's how out of it I was. So I'm going to reserve judgment on the Bug deck, but Muldrotha was terrible. Sphinx of Lost Trues, the last minute edition, was actually outstanding. It is what it is. And I'm going to continue to play the deck, but I will tell you this, I'm not going to count that in any type of Magic play because it was not good.
Matt and I have very different ways that we build decks when we try and put something together out of whole cloth, which is why we're not very good at doing it, because our minds work so wildly when we try to do it. But you just said that you were so hungover that you made so many play mistakes. Why would I trust your opinion about anything you experienced that night?
Well, I just know Muldrotha was terrible. Like, I was expecting it to be awesome, and it was not good. I think the next one on the docket is Sire of Stagnation.
I think that's fine. We're talking about a Bug value list with Heartless Summoning in Modern, by the way. I don't know if Matt made that clear at the beginning. Muldrotha for four seems like exactly where you want to be in that deck. We'll see if that actually plays out or not. It was standard at the LGS here in Q-Town this weekend. I got on the hype train and tried to see if Lich's Mastery was the answer to both control and aggro in the new format. I played the black, white, splashing red for, yes, Glorious End, and I snuck in a couple of Sweltering Suns, which were fantastic this weekend. 17 to 19 cyclers, depending on deck configuration. Faith of the Devoted, the black enchantment, which lets you play one more when you cycle. And if you pay that one more, then your opponent is drained for two life. It has great synergy with things like Renewed Faith. There are times when you're playing it that it feels like you picked up the leftover draft chaff and the deck just doesn't come together and does nothing. But there are also times when you play it that you feel like you're playing Vintage and your opponent is stuck playing Standard. So it can be very powerful. I think that if I'm going to go forward with the deck, which I have intentions to do right now, it's time to get serious about what removal is right. I defaulted to Moment of Craving because it helps extend the game as well as synergizing with Lich's Mastery when you have it down later. Based on the threats that I'm seeing played now, that might not be right. So going forward, I have to really think about what specific removal pieces I'm going to play. How many specific cyclers do I need at this point? There is some power there. After you have either Gideon of the Trials and an Emblem or Lich's Mastery, Glorious End has more modes than Cryptic Command. You get to play Time Walk, overpowered spells that all come on 1 3-mana instant in Standard. You can play Fog. You can play Time Stop. You can play Mana Short. You can do all of these things. And Time Walk, when it's at its best, they go for a big play to set up an attack. You just play it there, stop the turn. That spell that's on the stack is exiled. They don't get their attack phase. Then you untap and you're ready to go. So there is a lot of power if you can get to the point where you set it up. Believe it or not, it's the aggressive decks that really put me under the most heat. I played 3 rounds at FNM, 2 against 2 different builds of mono red. One, the mono red configuration that you would think of in Standard recently, and the other, the Skirk Prospector heavy build that I think some people are going to go to. It allows you to get to a turn 3 Glorybringer. Seems good, and it was certainly good against me. It also uses Siege Gang Commander, and with Skirk Prospector, you can get to it early as well as fire off more goblins earlier on the curve than you would think. So that deck sorely tested me. Goblin Chain Whirler is still good. I think you're going to see a couple now different kinds of red aggro decks going forward. So it'll be interesting to see if the same answers are good against both. So I split 2 3-game matches against the 2 red aggro decks, going 3-3 overall, and then absolutely had my way with a black-green mid-range deck. That deck can't put enough pressure on you fast enough. It's susceptible to Fumigate. You land Lich's Mastery. That's one of those cases where you feel like you're playing Vintage and they're playing like Limited. Faith of the Devoted down, and then you cycle Renewed Faith, do 2 to them, gain 2 life, and draw 5 cards. This game is over.
I gotta say, I was impressed when you said, hey, you want to test some Standard tonight over Skype on Wednesday? And I was like, sure. So I pulled out the old blue-green pummeler from, you know, God, however many months ago that I've put together. And you always come up with the most fascinating decks to play against when you're playtesting. I absolutely love it because there's always some angle that no one's thought of before. And this is one of those cases where I think you're onto something there. Lich's Mastery is absolutely a powerful Magic card. It's just going to take some tuning, but you got to start somewhere. And it's not perfect yet, but God, how much feedback did you get just from the games I played with you and then the games you played at 1FNM to kind of know how to tune the deck? And I think in the next couple months, we're going to see some Lich's Mastery decks out there, especially with the Glorious End, quote-unquote, non-bo combo to really enable the broken that you're doing with that card. So I think that's really, really fun, and that's the kind of stuff that I can't wait till summer rolls around when I don't have to work as much anymore, and I can actually kind of devote my time to brewing, which is really what's kind of in my wheelhouse.
I am by far from the only person thinking about Lich's Mastery. I'm sure there are a ton of people out there thinking about it and working on it, but this is one of those decks and one of those cards that it's not obvious to use on the first week or maybe the second week of a format. And when you have the events like Team Trios being where Standard is focused for the most part, you're going to use a fully committed weapon that people know the ins and outs of. They have the best build for it. Maybe that's not time to be doing that brewing
and researching in live game events. You know, if you're on a team with some people and you didn't get your build just right and you're the one who's like 2-7 over 9 rounds, you're feeling a little crappy about yourself right then. So I'm not surprised that we didn't see the card much this weekend, but I think you're right. I think going forward, it's going to be one of the alluring build around me's, and we'll see if the format does allow for it to be powerful and to be played and to make its presence felt. That was the Magic we got to play this week. Hope you got to play some Magic, and I hope it was glorious. Glorious end with Lich's Mastery and a Gideon Emblem out. And your opponent goes, why would you? Oh, yeah. I'm just going to stop you right there, untap, fumigate your board, gain 4 life, draw 4 cards, cycle this, drain you for 2. And so we cycle on into this week's tournaments. It was limited. GP Beijing, 908 players turned out. Zhang Ziyang defeated Yuki Matsumoto in the finals. 33 players went home on no points. In Dallas-Fort Worth, 1,043 players came out. And first-time GP entrant, Professor Robert Brown, knocked off Will Craddock, probably the most well-known player in the top 8, to take the title. One GP entered, one GP title taken down. That is quite the achievement for the assistant professor of engineering at Abilene Christian College, and he fared well for himself. By the way, 63 players went home with no points. The SCG Tour stopped at Baltimore for team trios. 257 teams, 18 went home with no points. James Liu on Green Black Snake, Alexander Ferzola on Humans in Modern, and Roshan Eppen on Sultai Delver in Legacy knocked off Brendan DeCandio on Blue-White Midrange in Standard, Ross Merriam on Elves in Modern, and Tannen Grace on Grixis Delver. Congratulations to the team of Liu, Ferzola, and Eppen for their win in Baltimore. Every time SCG does a team trio, they do a classic in each format. In Legacy, Brian Koval on Miracles took down a 152-player event. Modern saw 230. Roger Carroll used the metagame weapon of Humans to out-tempo the rest of the competition for the win. And in Standard, Zan Saeed on Black White Aggro picked up the win over 138 other players. Guys, as we look at this first weekend of Standard Constructed play with Dominaria, I was most impressed by the transformation of the metagame in a short amount of time after the release weekend. Black-White Aggro seems to have the number of the blue-white control decks, Brian. You mentioned you had loaned some cards to have other players from the Shark Tank be able to play. They wanted to play blue-white, and I know we were talking about it earlier. They had trouble with what seems to be the blue-white foil in black-white aggro, at least early in this format.
Yeah, it's black-white aggro is designed to beat that blue-white catch-all control deck that so many people were on the first week, and it's still a really strong deck. I just think it's going to need some tuning, and it might be actually need to add another color. But Heart of Kirin, the History of Benalia, the Knight of Malice, those three cards alone, where you can't cast out or seal away for an individual threat. If they've got an angel out, you can't have any kind of, you know, the Shalai, you can't have any kind of settle the wreckage going on because it targets, which is just crazy. Gideon of the Trials just gives you so much value. Heart of Kirin is such a good card because there's hardly any instant speed removal out of that blue-white deck. They're relying on settle the wreckage. They're relying on fumigate late game. But they really want to get to those single things early with the seal aways and the cast outs. And Heart of Kirin just presents so many problems. If it's not a creature, it's really hard to deal with. That coupled with the fact that Karn is drawing you extra cards, it's almost like functioning as an aggro deck. And then it can just kind of slow down and become kind of a very grindy deck. And it has hand disruption in the form of duress out of the sideboard. That's just really, really good out of a deck like this if you're gunning to beat a control deck. I'm curious to see how the matchups go with some of the red decks it's going to face, with some of the Snakes and Ladders, or even the Constrictor decks it's going to face. But it seems like it's got good game against most of the field right now.
Matt Bryan brought up the $64,000 question. How do we best use Karn in the format? I don't blame players for defaulting to control with him early on, but is his card draw engine going to be best in a deck like a black-white aggro where they can keep fueling up? And how long until we see just Karn in every format?
I don't think it's too long. That card is powerful. I mean, I wouldn't say Karn in every format, But maybe, yeah, the black-white really just took the format by storm. I mean, I've seen a lot of pros say Scarab God is not playable. That's saying a whole lot. I see a lot of pros say this is the most open standard's been in a long time. I think right now our level zero decks are black-white because it's an aggro mid-range control. It's weird because it has all those kind of different styles to it. And I think the green-white tokens deck, or not necessarily tokens, but the green-white deck that is running like, I think it's Shalab, I think that's a level zero deck as well. So we just got to kind of find those level one, level two decks. People are playing Sapperlings. People are playing all kinds of stuff. And I think once we get a dedicated standard tournament, large format tournament where it's just standard, it's not a classic, I think that's going to be pretty interesting, because once that happens, this format's going to be completely shaken up and it's going to be like a brand new standard. And hopefully that means people will forget the sins of the past, because green black with God Pharaoh's Gift and these blue black improvised decks are jumping around now. It blows my mind. And these cards are unique so that you can really build just about any deck you want.
Matt, you asked for a large format tournament coming up in the near future. Our Oracle will come from across the Atlantic in the old world. That's where Eternal Weekend Europe was this weekend. And this coming weekend, it is going to be a double GP in Birmingham, England. It's going to be Legacy Friday and Saturday. Brian, I hope you have a personal day to use Friday at the end of the school year. And then Saturday and Sunday, we're going to get a large format Standard GP. So this will be the first time Standard is on stage by itself after Dominaria comes out. This should be a very cool weekend. Remember, it gets started Friday in the UK, so that's going to be early. If you're not into the premiership and you're used to those early start times, this is going to start early for everyone here in the U.S. Paris in the springtime, a great place to get your Eternal on. It was the return of Eternal Weekend to Paris. Brian, you're going to walk us through the Legacy event this weekend.
282 players showed up in Paris for the Legacy main event at Eternal Weekend, and there were some really, really interesting decks, I thought, in this top eight, gentlemen. Turbo Depths, which they were calling Slow Depths on the Magic Bazaar website that we will link in the show notes. This is what took it down, took down Death and Taxes in the final. Other top eight decks of note, two Grixis Delver decks, a Dragon Stompy deck, which really just turns out to be mono red aggro, one Dredge deck, Manaless Dredge, a Jeskai Control deck that I want to get your opinions on, and one Miracles deck, which I was very interested to see. But the Turbo Depths deck, they were talking about it as Slow Depths, and I wanted to dig a little bit deeper into this, guys. This is a Depths deck that uses three Dark Confidant, a Sylvan Library, four Thoughtseize, and four Duress main deck to make sure that it can do what it wants to do. Is that where we're going? Are we going to see combo decks coming forward that are going to use the power of Bob to just keep drawing lands and very low casting cost creatures to not do that much damage to you, to get the right amount of cards so you can resolve your Depths combo, Hurley?
I think so. I mean, the lands decks are very versatile and they're just keep adding tools. And it's getting to the point where, you know, Tabernacle's a $3,000 card now, and a lot of these decks are cutting Tabernacles because you either play Grixis Delver, Four Color Pile, or you're playing these land style decks, and the four card pile decks just really don't care that much. They've got so much value that it just slows them down a little bit, and or they can just wasteland it. There's a lot going on with these lands decks, and I don't know which one's best. I'll be 100% honest. I don't know if there is a best one. I frankly, I don't know if you gave me the choice of any of them to take to a Legacy Open or a Legacy tournament, I wouldn't know which one to pick even if you gave to me which metagame we're walking into.
The deck that caught my eye the most this weekend was Julien Druard, which was on a Jeskai Control list, which lost one game to two to the winning Slow Depths deck to Vladimir Arnuv. But Sean, this deck really, really intrigued me. Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, True Name Nemesis, Geist of St. Treft. It seems in some ways that this was kind of like a modern Legacy hybrid. What about this Jeskai Control list? Is this something where someone kind of looked at the Mardu list and kind of said, oh, we can do that in Jeskai. I'm going to see if that's going to work in Legacy. And obviously he took it to a top eight finish.
Well, it's interesting to me because you have so many tools available in those color combinations. And when Wizards was printing not just hybrid mana cards, but split cards, Boros received a lot of the really valuable ones in older formats, wear, tear, and so on after that. So you have access to great tools and in a faster mana format where you can bring Geist down potentially earlier. It is an incredible clock. And the fact that the Geist itself has Hexproof makes it an incredible weapon against one of the decks of choice right now, which is whatever flavor of land you're on, because it can't be Punishing Fire. It can't be Maze of Ith. And the fact you can crack in for six a turn sets an incredible clock. So, no, I'm not surprised to see this. I think this might be something that, if it's adopted wider, shakes up the Legacy metagame a little bit. And as for your question about lands, I'm not surprised they adopted Bob. When we were down in St. Louis for the Legacy tournament earlier this year, I had a conversation with a lands player about lands' ability to splash for almost whatever color they want. Not only do they run between 34 and 37 lands, not 42 or 43 like the old decks used to, but you can afford to play whatever you want. When 37 of the cards in your deck cost zero and you play nothing that costs more than two, why wouldn't you play Dark Confidant? That just seems like a natural choice to me. And he said, yeah, I've toyed around with it, but I haven't been brave enough to register it for a tournament yet. If the lands decks move away from control and more toward a value control combo engine, because what you're seeing with the green-black deck, Thought Seizing and Inquisition of Kozilek-ing to make sure the coast is clear before making Merit Liege, that's a control combo deck at its heart. They're just doing it with lands as opposed to other cards. So I think Bob is going to be the natural extension, and it's going to open up some interesting lines for those lands decks because they're suddenly going to become susceptible to things that they weren't previously, but they're going to be able to close the door faster than they used to, too.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I was kind of like looking at it going, yeah, that's brilliant. Of course you would want Bob in a deck like this, that you're just basically drawing more lands and taking zero damage off an extra card every turn. I don't think there's a Magic player out there who doesn't see the value in that. The only other thing that I saw, guys, out of the Grixis Delver list, it seems like we've kind of settled on a two True Name Nemesis, two Gurmag Angler split on North American. Now Europe as well has kind of taken that on. Do you feel like that's the right number of each, or is it going to be metagame dependent going forward, Sean?
I do think it's the right number of each because each one requires a different answer, and that deck has the ability to brainstorm and do other things, so it can find the one that's most relevant. And even if it gets the one that isn't as relevant in its particular matchup, it still requires a specific set of answers. The only downside that I see to those two is the wider adoption of Edict. And everyone is ready for Sneak and Show now. Everyone seems to be ready for lands making the 2020. So Diabolic Edict as an instant takes care of both of those. And it also, yes, is an absolute hammer against my beloved Reanimator deck. So anything to stop the wide adoption of Diabolic Edict, I am in favor of.
What do you guys think about the cutting of some of the utility lands, you know, that used to be ubiquitous in these lands decks? I mean, you know, some of these decks did cut Tabernacle. Is that the right move? I mean, are we going more towards, I mean, what's the first cards you cut to go down to that 36, 37 lands?
I think the question here is, who has Jody Keith's phone number? Because none of us are actually able to answer that question in the way that an educated lands player would be able to. I think the move away from value lands to a combo control is inevitable if the combo control deck version of lands beats the value version of lands on a regular basis. Otherwise, why make the move? Because both decks now, with the advent of Thespian Stage, can win fast enough. It isn't like the old days, Brian, when we used to go to Legacy tournaments and lands had to win by recurring Barbarian Ring. Like, it was a 80-hour a week job to be able to play lands to a not draw in one round of a Legacy tournament.
And these were the days before something like Rest in Peace, or before you had real graveyard hate,
right,
that has just come out in the last 10 years. So yeah, it was a brutal, brutal slog through those kinds of things.
My answer to your question, Hurley, is a recurring one right now. I don't know. You said it earlier. You don't know which version of lands to take. I would have no idea which cards would be sensible to cut in that situation.
The thing that fascinates me the best, the most about this current lands iteration that I'm looking at from the winning player from EW, I find zero Tabernacles either in the main deck or in the board. And the board is just a fascinating mashup of different answers to different types of archetypes. You have a Caracas, you have a Mazavith, you have a Croson Grip, you have Marsh Casualties, you've got Dread of Night, you've got one Liliana, the Last Hope, three Surgical Extractions, even a Bitter Blossom, and a Graft Digger's Cage. There's nothing in here that's going like the Life of Loam value idea. It's basically get stuff down, Vampire Hex Mage, control their stuff, make sure they don't have stuff with Duress and Thoughtseize, and win the game. It's so efficient, and I'm really attracted to this deck more than I am for the very value town oriented thing. Plus, it's much easier on the pocketbook, everybody.
It'll be interesting to see which deck innovations from this weekend in Paris spill over to the Legacy GP in Birmingham. The Mox was this weekend. You play more Magic Online than anybody else on the cast. What'd you find interesting, and who took it down?
So first place was Kagamo. I don't know actually who that is. There was a couple of names on here that I do recognize. Daryl Ayers is on here. The one interesting thing is out of the top 32 decks, this was a modern tournament, mind you, 133 total players. Out of the top 32, there was 40% were humans. There was a lot of humans. We had a lot of different variations of Young Pyromancer, a lot of red-black Young Pyromancer, some Lingering Souls, and two Affinity decks hiding in there, and then a bunch of Boggles as well. Kind of the one thing I'm seeing interesting here is there's some interesting Jeskai control decks in here, and there's some really interesting red-blue control decks. I mean, they're just running a lot of really cool different things, and I think it's mostly to beat, you know, the humans, because that's public enemy number one. But it's worth looking at a couple of new Teferis in some of these decks. I was not able to watch any. I know there are some technical problems as far as some people got booted early when they were in the Mox and they were not dealt with well to actually put them at rest, this, you know, because a lot of them were angry. Really cool. Check out the top 32 and you may find an interesting deck that you might like.
My big question after the Mox this weekend is, once Wizards expands the card base in Arena, will they be hosting the Mox in Arena?
I don't know if they will. I think it's a better viewer experience, but I don't think they have any plan to actually ever introduce old school cards back into it unless they come into Standard. So I think you're just kind of stuck, you know, with what you have. And if they ever do the sealed Moxes, I think doing it on Arena would make a lot of sense, because you're not having the technical problems that you probably do with Magic Online.
All right. It was a selfish question, I'll admit. I just want to know what animations they would have had for all the legendaries in my Reanimator deck. Like, I can just imagine the animation for like Gristlebrand coming into play or something along Elish Norn. You shall not go wide on me. You know, something along those lines. Would have been a lot of fun to see them do that. The Mox this weekend, hopefully it continues to be a huge success for Wizards. There wasn't a lot of news this week, guys. Everything was quiet, and with Mox being on the front burner for Wizards, I can understand why they didn't want to upstage that with a lot of news out of Renton this week. So to celebrate episode 100, which is what we're doing tonight. We got into the tournaments and the tournament news and what we love about cards and love to play. But this is also a celebration of tryhards reaching episode 100. We decided, after I made them accept the homework assignment, to design a card or a mechanic or an idea that we would love to have in the game of Magic. Now, obviously, all of these are going to be colored by our own experiences and the way that we play the game of Magic. We are not professional designers. We are not even professional podcasters. We are just people who love Magic and want to see something added to it. So, Brian, I'll lead with you. What did you design to bring to the party? What are you unwrapping to give Magic here on episode 100?
What I'm basically doing is just, you know, selling my future creation, because once I thought of this idea, I felt like, man, I just need Patrick Sullivan's job at whatever game company he works for, because this is just an awesome idea. Everybody knows I like lands, and lands are like the heart of Magic. So I was thinking of, I want a land card that I want. And then I'm like, Tibbetts, don't go land, go cycle of lands. So I think I've come up with something that I think Wizards should adopt in the next couple of years. And I just to tease everyone, I have the first card in this cycle, and it's called Archipelago. An archipelago, guys, is a group of islands. This is a card that does not have land type island, but if you control two or more islands, Archipelago gives you two blue mana. But I'm even thinking further on this. I'm thinking cards like Mountain Range. I'm thinking cards like Aspen Grove. I'm thinking white and black as well, that I still don't have names for. But as long as you control two of the basic land types, that card comes into play and gives you two of that land color. If you control all five of them, you get two of each of the land types, tapping any one of those. I think it's an absolutely broken concept, but oh, I really like the idea.
You blew my mind right there.
Yeah.
Like, things are crazy. First of all, for white, I would suggest Serengeti, because like the plains of the Serengeti.
Oh, see?
So
see,
that would be my thing. And then for black, it's swamps, so it could be Florida.
Oh, I was going to say Washington, D.C.
You guys are awesome. This is great. Yeah, we could just call it Potomac River. That would be great. So I like this idea of, as long as you control two basic land types, though it comes into play, it gives you, you know, that color. But if you control two or more basics, it gives you two of that color. So you're automatically ramping in on like turn three. And since it's a non-basic land, you can only play four of them in a deck. But I don't want it to be fetchable. I think that would be too broken in a way. So I don't think Archipelago would be fetchable. I don't think Mountain Range would be fetchable. Serengeti, as Sean's idea. So, but I really love this idea of, you know, tapping it for two of that color when it comes into play, as long as you control two of the other lands. I'm sure there's an idea there that's going to go forward.
Oh, no, that sounds amazing.
I love lands, and I love looking at different words for lands. I think Magic has done such a good job of teaching our youngsters geography with things like, people are like, what's a tundra? And I'm like, I'm glad you asked, because I'm happy to tell you. Like,
it's a what is a $400 out-of-print reserve list Magic card.
Uh-huh.
So depending on who you're talking to, you got to know your audience, of course.
Exactly. So, now, I have a little bit of a secret that I have to share right now. I designed my card with the idea that Brian would design a land. And Matt, I'm guessing you went janky creature, something that would fit in like a Gitrog monster deck. So I can't wait.
I'm offended because I did not design a creature.
Oh, well, I'm a little disappointed right now. Lay it on us. What do you got for your contribution? Because this was wide open. It could be a mechanic. It could be anything that you want to add to the game of Magic. It didn't have to be a card specifically. So, Matt, what did you come up with in your Drunken Derby weekend haze?
That actually did come up during the Drunken Derby party on Saturday. I mentioned this. I was like, hey, what's something you guys would want? We came up with a general idea, and I like the idea of an artifact that has very high upside by keeping you alive, but it also has a very high downside where it's very, very risky. So what I came up with, I named it Solidified Planeswalker Spark, and I figured this would cost either three or four artifacts, and it's got flash. Choose up to three permanents you don't control. Exile those till end of turn, and then at the end of your turn, lose three life for each permanent that entered the battlefield under your opponent's control. It's a colorless kind of save your butt type of thing, because you could flash it in during somebody's upkeep to exile their lands. But then if they get a fetch land out, you're taking six life because two permanents came into play. But it's also a way for decks to kind of combat those combo decks and to combat, you know, hey, he's attacking in with everything, but I just need one more turn. That's where I came up with the idea of really high upside or really high danger as well. What do you guys think?
I love the name. Planeswalker Spark is such an iconic reference in the Magic world. So I love the idea. I think it's actually reasonably costed. It seems like it's a high risk, high reward type card. I wonder if Planeswalker Spark shouldn't give you more of an advantage versus kind of the high risk side of it, because mm-hmm. what's the risk of people becoming Planeswalkers? Not a whole lot. They become basically immortal. Maybe cast it a little higher and make the drawback a little lower, maybe one life for each or something
two
like that.
Or something like that.
But I absolutely love that idea. I think that's fantastic.
I just don't think within the game of Magic right now there's a keep me in the game for one turn type of card that is a colorless card that any deck could play. You're essentially playing around a combat trick, but it kind of adds some randomization to the game as well.
Matt, I'm fascinated by the way you put this together. And if Magic was a completely digital game, I think there's a way that we could go with this that you could never do in paper, which is you take a creature, maybe restricted to a legendary creature that you have in play, and play solidified Planeswalker Spark, and you make that creature into a Planeswalker. If it was a digital-only game, you would then have a list of Planeswalker abilities that you could assign to it in, like, the plus one, minus two sort of Planeswalker style.
Oh, that'd be so fun.
You could Urza and Unstable, then.
Sure, something like that. Now, you could never do that in paper. But were describing that, and I'm thinking, wow, wouldn't it be cool if you could take a legendary creature you had and make it give it its spark in the game?
And see, I kind of wanted something that was a throwback to, maybe it's a new Planeswalker, unpredictable Planeswalker, where maybe they just phase out randomly. I was actually reading earlier this week I was kind of working on this a little bit.
Becomes a Planeswalker.
Yeah, I was reading the old Teferi stuff, and I was just like, what would that do? What unpredictable things would it have on the world, and how would it be able to generate some type of advantage for you, but then give something to your opponent too?
Do you see this as an enchantment? Do you see this as a sorcery?
I think it's just a flash artifact, honestly.
Flash artifact. See, part of me thinks it might be an enchantment, which is harder to get rid of than artifacts in the game. Enchantments tend to be the most bugaboo things, and maybe it has hexproof. I don't know.
Indestructible, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. I think there's something there. Planeswalker Spark seems very Dominaria-esque.
Yeah.
Very to the root of the game kind of thing. Legendary enchantment springs to mind. I really like that idea.
Since you're making something, it's Planeswalker Spark, is there a way to make it an aura that would attach to a player?
Yeah, I mean, we have the curses now. Yeah. So yeah, you have something along those lines, absolutely.
Or what about going the other way, like captured Planeswalker Spark and make it a curse that you attach to your opponent?
In my mind, they keep coming back to the spark. Now they're telling the stories about how they told the stories in the past about how some of the Planeswalkers got their sparks and they ended up on worlds. They didn't know how they got there. It was just a fight or flight response. And I have to imagine, what happened with Teferi, where he literally phased out a whole city and then he couldn't get it back because of all the power he had to extend. So what unintended consequences are there?
Super interesting. Great job. I love it. I love the idea. And yeah, it branches off in so many interesting ways. I gave myself a little bit of a handicap or extra challenge when designing my card. You can do a lot of things with a lot of words, but I like cards that are clean and cleanly templated. So I challenged myself to come up with something that had 10 or less total words on the card. So here's what I came up with. Sacred Mausoleum is the name of the card. It'll cost either one generic mana or two generic mana. I think the proper number is probably 1.5. It's an artifact. Sacred Mausoleum is an artifact. Graveyards have hexproof. That's all the text. That's all there is. Now, here's where I'm going with this. It dampens Deathrite Shaman in Eternal formats, but it doesn't render it useless. You can still target your own graveyard. You just can't get food from your opponent's graveyard.
Okay.
This exists.
Yeah, because I was thinking Silent Gravestone there. I'm like, that's what, but no. Okay, I see where you're going with that.
This exists. Along the same line, you have Grafdigger's Cage if you want to specifically do a certain thing to graveyards. You have Ground Seal if you want to do something else. And now I think this Sacred Mausoleum, graveyards have hexproof, would be just another sort of ingredient that you could pick out depending on how you wanted your deck to play out and how you wanted to engage with your opponent. This still allows for effects like Nihil Spellbomb and Relic of Progenitus because those say target player exiles their graveyard. So you don't have hexproof as a player, so you could still have your graveyard exiled that way. And being a one or two mana artifact in Legacy, this falls under Abrupt Decay and everything else that destroys, anything at that point. So fragile, but potentially powerful because of the way it interacts with one of the most ubiquitous cards. And it doesn't obviate that card, but it just tamps down on the power at the same time. Too over the line here? Am I showing too much of my Reanimator roots at this point? Or is this something that you could see being simple and clean and useful in a format?
I think it would be very useful. Like I said, I was thinking of Silent Gravestone, and I'm like, well, we kind of had that, but then I didn't think about targeting your own. So I think that would add a really interesting kind of twist to the game where you could build around this, or you could really put it into any deck, and it's not going to burn you on your own artifact stuff. So I really like it. What did you say it was going to be costed at, Sean? What'd you think?
I actually think that its proper value is 1.5. It's one or two. One might be too efficient if all the answers for it are two. So I could see this being two generic mana very easily. But I think it has to be generic, especially the way they've started to push generic mana with Karn, Scion of Urza, and some other things now. Is this an effect that would warp the game too much? Seeing all of the different graveyard hate that you have, it doesn't cut it off. It just cuts down the latitude.
No, I love the idea that the thought you've put into this, because, and I think two is the right number. Two generic mana seems to be the right number. When we talk about something like a Graft Digger's Cage, when we talk about something like Rest in Peace, we're talking in the 1-2 level. And if it's graveyards have hexproof, but not the cards within those graveyards, I think that's fascinating. So you've cut off like one angle of attack, but not all the other ones. So if you have Sacred Mausoleum out along with Silent Gravestone, now you've locked out graveyards. But if you only have one of them, you've only locked out like half of it. So I think that's fascinating from a design standpoint to kind of think about the graveyard as a whole, or the graveyard as an individual cards made up of those kind of thing, a la Deathrite Shaman, Snapcaster Mage, etc. So no, I really like that card design, and the name is fantastic. I think there's some really good flavor text to go along with that.
I have one thought here, and this is totally ripping off a mechanic that's currently in the game, but what about if on the front it was a one cost artifact and then it flipped into a land on the backside, where maybe when there was 10 cards in your graveyard, similar to Search for Ascanta, maybe when there was X amount of cards or X amount of cards in your opponent's graveyard, it flipped into a land that did something that interacted with the graveyard somehow.
Six mana and reanimate a creature from your graveyard?
Something like that, like five or six mana. You can flip it. It's a May. Maybe it's exile your own graveyard, create a XX token equal to the number of cards you exile. Something that interacts with the graveyard, but on the front it protects it, and then you flip into it, and on the back it essentially says, okay, here's what you do with those graveyards now.
I so wanted to try to design a flip card, but I was starting to think about like all the different flip cards we have with the Ixalan block stuff and with the Innistrad block stuff. And I was just like, God, I just do not feel up to the task. So that would be the level two of designing that I would go to. But I really love the flip card idea for something like that as well, where you use those to kind of delve away something and then it creates something for you.
I think the other takeaway from this is like R&D's job, fun, but hard, man.
Oh, yeah.
200 something cards in a set. Like, I struggled to come up with one card for like 4 days. So I guess I'm just not up to the task. If you have an idea for something that you would like to see in the game, or a card you've designed or want to share, we'd love to see it. Email us, thetryhards3@gmail.com. Guys, thanks so much for putting that time and thought into it. Those are three very cool cards. And again, Maru, they're yours. We're not asking for anything other than we get that card for the preview for the set that it's in. Otherwise, take it and run wild. Guys, this is episode 100 of Tryhards. It's a celebration not only of our love of Magic, but our love of getting together every week to do this show. What have you guys taken away from doing this? We're all friends outside the game, and that's how this came around. Is there a moment or two or a specific thing that you think of, Matt, when you think back on, we've been doing this for 2 years now? When you include our two Byhards episodes, our dirty, unwashed cousin of Tryhards, it's what happens when one of us can't be here. And in 2 years, we've just had two of those episodes, and we've been able to put something out each week, which has been important to us. Is there something that is important to you, or a couple of somethings, or a couple of memories that you look back on over these now 100 episodes that stands out to you?
And not one particular thing, but I think it's more so that we very quickly learned, for all three of us, this was a lot more work than just hopping on, recording, and you're done. I mean, I tried to keep up on the Facebook stuff. I really need to do a better job of that. I try to keep up on the Twitter, and I try to keep up on just, you know, some of the background stuff. Sean, I know you put your heart and soul into editing this cast every week. And Brian, well, I don't know what it is you do. I'm just kidding. No, Brian, you I mean, you have a very unique view that you bring to it, but it's like we all kind of have our niche, and it's a lot of work to maintain, you know, what you might call like the brand equity of tryhards. And I just look back on it. I'm like, man, I'm like, everyone's put a lot into this. I never in a million years would have thought that we'd be at episode 100, like you said, Sean, with only missing a couple. The other big one was that we've kind of expanded our social circles a little bit to, you know, some of our fans and some other casts and things like that. And I hope the next 50 episodes that we can have some kind of surprises and we can actually expand and make it more, this podcast more accessible for everybody.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say things you didn't expect to do. I never thought that we would be on Patreon or do anything. One of my moments that I look back on is when you two twisted my arm and like, we should do Patreon. And I'm like, no, I don't want to deal with that. Like, why? Who would want to listen to this and like admit to other people that they listen to this? So that's been fun. And to everyone who supported us on Patreon, thank you so much. That's been amazing. Hopefully you were able to jump on before we actually record this cast tonight. There is a treat up for you on patreon.com/tryhards if you're a $5 a month or more patron, as far as the special intro that episode 100 is going to have. So I hope you enjoyed that. What stood out for me is any time that we've gotten together, I think there's only been two episodes out of the first 100 where the three of us have actually been in the same physical space to record. And if you go back, you can hear a different energy in those episodes when we get together as opposed to what we do week to week. Not that it's not good. I really enjoy what we do, but obviously it's a special treat when all three of us can be in the same room and work together. And thanks again to Nick, who's a friend of the show and helped facilitate that the last time we did that in Pittsburgh. And the other thing that has stood out to me, we've had two shows that we've done where we've done the tryhards version of the David Letterman top 10 list. We bit off way too much with the top 50 Planeswalker show, which was,
yes, we did.
which was so much fun because we were so naive about what it took to do that going into it. But we were so adamant in our convictions about what was good and arguing for it that it's still one of my favorite ones to go back and listen to. It's in the early 30s. I think it's called Walkering the Holidays, and it was a holiday episode that we did that with. And the other one, we did our top 20 lands, and we had one
caveat.
You guys
are wrong on both of those.
We had one caveat.
Let's not go there.
And that was to not just go crazy with the dual lands, because they could have been, you know, just lands 1 through 10 and obviated the list at that point. But that's something that, and we've gotten good responses too. So in the future, it's not going to become a crutch for us, but in the future, we might do some more themed events where we get into some of the things that we love about Magic and some rankings and of course some talking that always seems to go along with it and make it so much fun. Brian, you look back on these now 99 and three quarters episodes. What is it that you've enjoyed about getting together, if anything?
Definitely not if anything. Every week is actually really, really fun. Mondays seem to have taken on a different luster. You know, Mondays at work with the memes and everything else about, you know, someone's got a case of the Mondays from Office Space has taken on a whole new meaning. I'm like, ah, it's cast day. You know, it's kind of like a, you know, kind of like game day, Friday nights. It's football. It's basketball. It's whatever it is in your own little worldview. So I've really looked forward to hopping on every week and kind of being prepared for things. Some weeks better than others, of course. But there's two episodes that have stood out to me. The first one I want to say was Pittsburgh. I felt like that was such a fun time that we had at the tournament, even though maybe results didn't go, Sean, your way or my way, but it was really, really fun to see Hurley advance as far as he did, to play so well, to experience the town, and then to sit down on that Sunday in front of, you know, kind of have the round robin and do the cast and kind of just everything so fresh and relive it. It was really, really fun. And Sean's right. The energy is just different with those when we're all in the room at the same time. The second one I will say, which was just terrifying, Hurley, and don't try to deny it. You felt the same way. The first time Sean was not on the cast and you and I did Byhards together.
Oh, yeah. God, I was scared.
God, I was too. And we spent like, I don't know how much time pre-show just trying to make sure that we had all the technical stuff down and was it going to work or were we going to have nothing to show for it. It actually turned out to be in a really fun show. Thank God Sean's been here the other 98 episodes of this, of course, to make us sound really, really good and better than we really are in real life. But those are the two episodes that kind of, in a nutshell, describe, you know, what it is. It's when we're all together or we're all separate. That energy level, I think, is really, really good. We all bring different personalities to the show, different life experiences, yet it still works every week. Sean said it, the Patreons, you've created this, made this work for us. You've supported us this entire time. It's fun that we get emails from you when we reach out a little bit. And I'm so happy to know that people are actually listening to us and enjoy the content that we're spewing every week, and hope to do it for another 100 episodes. But it's been a really, really fun ride for these first 100 for sure.
You two held out on me that whole time. That's interesting to hear. I didn't hear any of that anxiety over buy-hards with Brian and Matt until just now.
Yeah. We were I think we had an hour before it that we were like, so do we want to talk about this? And like, we had like marching plans for the entire like 40 minutes of the show.
Yeah. Well, Sean, some of that is, it's just, you know, like when I walk into my classroom, I have my lesson plan. I know what I'm doing.
Sure.
That's my comfort zone. This is your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's so nice to be able to log on and you're like, all right, here, guys, here's the rundown. Here's what we're going to do. You've got this segment. We got this segment. You've done a better job of like throwing stuff to us to make it our responsibility, which at first was kind of like terrifying. I'm like, but you're so much better at it than we are. Why don't you just do it? But it's true. We have to take ownership of what we're doing. But for that, just everything being so even keeled out in the post-production is something that we were like, oh God, we're going to sound like a bunch of rambling idiots for, you know, 45 minutes. And it turned out being a really, really good show. But it was still one of those things where the first time you do it, you know, it's kind of like asking that girl to dance at the junior high mixer. Just not sure how things are going to go right off the bat. Thankfully, it worked out well.
Well, and there is one more story that I'll tell about this. And I think I've mentioned this on one other episode before. And that is that I put Brian and Matt, when we all agreed that this is something we wanted to do and we were going to commit to do it, I put them through a basic training version of doing the podcast for weeks before we recorded official episode number one and really set to the point. What did I put you guys through, like 4 weeks of doing the cast before we did episode one?
I think so.
Yeah, it might have been three or four. It was a lot.
It's been a lot of fun, and enjoying this with two of my very good friends, as this has been done now for a couple of years, and listening to you guys grow and grow into that role and take on more stuff throughout the cast. And we're going to keep changing, keep evolving, keep growing as things go forward here on Tryhards. But you can never leave your most trusted touchstones. And you know what that means? It's time to reach out that arm and push the button. Are we going up? Are we going down? In this week's In the Elevator Retrospective.
So this is a kind of a quick rundown of the last 50 episodes of how I've done In the Elevator, called Authority of the Consoles at $1. Of course, we saw a big increase there. Those are buy-listed now for like $3 to $4. I actually hit a nice one in Liliana's Death Majesty and Haven the Spirit Dragon foil. Some of my bigger misses, and Brian, I know this is going to hurt you, but Mavern Fane Dusk Apostle and Vona Butcher of Magan did not go anywhere. And then probably my biggest miss, called the Standard Showdown Lands, episode 78. That's back in November. They were $3.50 to $6 at the time, and you're able to get them about $2. I really thought those were going to take off quite a bit. Nothing really crazy stands out except for those Authority of the Consoles. Like I said, most of them just stayed in the same range. I can't believe, like, Concealed Courtyard foils that I called back in October, those are still about $10. I really expected those to go up quite a bit more. And Glorybringer was actually one that went from like $6 to $3.50. I called it as a buy at $3.50, and then it went back up, it went back down, and it just kind of, you never made much money off of it. Didn't really have any turds, didn't really have any great ones. Scarab God was an easy one for a sell. So anything you remember that you're like, oh, what the hell are you talking about?
Matt, I think you've been too hard on yourself on two fronts. One, the Standard Showdown lands are still beautiful, and I think they're underpriced. And two, it seems like Concealed Courtyard may actually have its best last days in front of it with the black-white aggro deck. So maybe posthumously for your pick, you may still achieve that level, because that's going to be a key land as a fast land, letting that black-white aggro deck get out of the gates. Brian, that's what I see.
Oh, totally. Hurley, you've had some really interesting picks, because sometimes I'm just like, what the hell are you doing? You know, when you're like aligned Hadron Network, buy them. And it's like, yeah, no, never did anything. It's like, it's true. Because, you know, just like Magic Finance is, and people even from Jeremy Aronson to people at Channel Fireball to Star City Games, they're going to tell you, yeah, they did not call this kind of stuff. But there's certain things that I think you're going to hit on, and things like, you know, foil Traverse the Ovenwald that you called, and it's like, yeah, that card did some things. Oh, yeah, it was one of the early picks that you did. I remember this one, Nahiri the Harbinger, where you were like, sell, sell, sell these. They were at like 38. You're like, sell them immediately. And I was like, what are you talking about? This card is going to be impactful forever. And they went from 38 to like 20 in like a week and a half. So I was like, damn, Hurley knows a lot more about this stuff.
And I think I think they're at like six now. I mean,
yeah.
In these last 50, I also called buy Ash Barons at three. They're at 10. And buy Field of Runes at when they were like 75 cents when they were first released. And now they're like a $4 uncommon. There was a lot of misses in there too. And, you know, there's some easy ones like selling your Mox Ambers. I mean, Mox Amber hasn't done jack diddly with Karn, Teferi, Lyra. Those three mythics just eating up all the value. I mean, that was one that just couldn't hold value. So that was a kind of an easy one.
Well, you know what? You say it's easy, but I think people still, to the untrained eye and to somebody who hasn't been around Magic or Finance for a long time, that card just seems so powerful on its face that it's really easy to just kind of say, oh my god, that card's going to go bonkers, it's going to be a $100 card, it's going to be the next Mox Opal. Well, it may be the next Mox Opal in 3 years, but there's a lot that has to happen between now and then for this to take place. So you're absolutely right that the right move right now for Finance is to sell that thing, and so I wouldn't disagree with you, but it's a little harder than you're making it out to be, so I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk that it's obvious.
Each week before we do the show, we ask Matt what the In the Elevator pick is and Brian what the 3 minutes to brew pick is. Brian always has his 3 minutes to brew pick ready to go. Matt hardly ever has the In the Elevator pick nailed down when we're about to start the show. So the average rundown page has Matt's pick on the line and then a scratch through it and then his pick. And then he goes and gets another beer and then comes back and goes, you know what? I thought about it on the way up the stairs. Scratch that one. I'm going to do this other. And it's not the one he picked the first time. It's like a third card that you weren't even thinking about at that point. So,
but here's the thing. This is how Matt chooses his legacy deck to play at certain tournaments as well.
Usually,
I'm just going to run with the
usually 30 minutes before the tournament starts.
Yes, yes.
Oh yeah.
You find his deck list that he registered, and it's like all scratched out and stuff. It's like, what happened? He's like, yeah, I just decided to register Mono Green 12.
He is the one person that does not get any benefit from deck list sheets being available to print out at home so you can fill them out ahead of time so you don't have that. Like, it's just, he's never going to make that decision before 5 minutes before it's time for the player meeting. That's just a little insight on how Matt's mind works and what it's like to edit him each week. It's time for 3 minutes to brew this week here on Tryhards. An auspicious number. Brian, what are we brewing up on 100?
For 100, I had to kind of go back to the roots, and I remember I bought a lot of Mirage back in the day, going to the Galleria Mall in St. Louis on my way home from work at Computerland. It was just all kinds of craziness going on. I was buying packs from all kinds of places that I could, and one of the cards that I brewed with a lot, not well, but a lot, Reparations. This is a white, blue, and generic enchantment. Whenever target opponent successfully casts a spell that targets you or a creature you control, you may draw a card. I know that this is very limited for brewing purposes. It's not from Dominaria. It's not anything that's going to be standard legal, modern legal even. But it just hits me in my wheelhouse, A, for the card, and B, for the flavor text. Sorry, I burned down your village. Here's some gold. Is Reparations like another coming of Standstill? Would we ever see this in a Vintage or Legacy-type control Standstill deck? Or is this just kind of back to the chaff? Some people are going to pay for it because it's on the reserve list and it's an old card.
I remember a lot of Reparations. This was another card that I was like, oh yeah, this card seems really, really good. But I just don't think it does enough, to be honest. The spells that target a creature kill the creature. So it's like, oh, I paid a blue, a white, and a colorless for an enchantment that they fatal push my creature and I draw a card off of it. Okay. I guess if you're playing, you know, a blue-white control deck, you could potentially draw a counter. I had this in multiple, you know, type 1.5 decks. This is before Legacy, but type 1.5 decks. And it just never worked out the way I wanted it. I don't know what this even goes into. I have to imagine it's a blue-white control deck. And I have to imagine that it's one that's got some type of key creature or creatures that you have to basically keep on the board to have the deck do anything. So other than that, I don't know where it goes, but I do like the card.
Sean, are you going to rip my heart out like Hurley just did and tell me that this card is bad? Or do you see a place for this somewhere in the metagame or in some format that is maybe not as played as often as maybe our beloved Legacy?
Well, maybe if it was reprinted and eligible for Frontier. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not a format either. this card, in my mind, is the victim of coming oh so close, but not getting over the finish line. It's a generic, a white and a blue. If it was just a white and a blue, I think you'd be talking about more mana efficiency, and you can get there if you replaced or added a word or two in the text. If it said whenever an opponent casts a spell or activates an ability that targets you or a permanent you control, you may draw a card. Now we're talking. But because it's limited to you as a player and creatures, this has little relevancy to anything beyond standard. And I don't see Reparations being reprinted for standard play. But I love the intention of what it's doing, and it tells a story. I just don't think it's efficient enough and casts its net wide enough for constructed play. If it had the adjustments I mentioned, I could see this in a deck along with Punisher things like Back to Basics, Standstill, Reparations, if it was just a white and a blue. If you had that trio all powered by Enlightened Tutor at that point, I think this one is doomed to be forever just irrelevant.
This is the card that I feel was printed in a time where creatures were so heavy and so dominant that control decks wanted it but couldn't really play it for all the reasons Sean and Hurley have said. It just doesn't do enough. If it says permanent you control, it at least replaces itself. But you can cast Reparations for 3, have it on the battlefield, someone can disenchant it, and you get nothing for it. It just goes to the graveyard. If at least it replaced itself, it would be a little bit better playable. And I think that's the way that people would design the card nowadays with the same intent. But because it's only you or a creature you control, that's very, very narrow in the way that cards are designed today. We want to have as lean and efficient cards as we possibly can, and this one is just a little too sloppy. So I love Reparations for the nostalgia purposes.
Reparations, this week's 3 minutes to brew. It commits the same sin of costing one too many as Crackdown. If that was just one in a white, I think we'd have another entrant for that blue-white enchantment-driven control deck that could be playable in Legacy. That brings us up to what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? Guys, I'm going to cheat this one a little bit. What'd you do to get better is usually the question. What did I do to get better at podcasting? I was asked to be a guest this week on a podcast called Damage Control. It's done by a group of locals in Q-Town here and recorded at my LGS, Underdark Games. And they're a movie-focused podcast. They talk about not only the state of movies, but how would you do certain things if you were looking at genres? Hollywood collects so many of their ideas now from other genres. This past week, their topic was board games to movies, what could make the leap? So they asked me to guest on it. Thanks to Daniel and the rest of the crew that records at Underdark for having me on Damage Control this week. It was so much fun to be a guest, and I got to live like the other half. Walk in, do the show, walk out, and not worry about anything after that. Yeah, it was fun to do that for once. Brian, what'd you do to get better this week?
I got this great text from a player at the shop who I've known kind of in passing and said, hey, I'm graduating college in a few weeks. I've had my run at the shop. I'm planning on moving away. So I have all of these proxy decks built for Modern and Legacy. I hear you're the guy to reach out to kind of collect these things to teach other people. Would you like them? And I felt really honored at the time because I was kind of like, man, of all the people at the shop who spend a lot more time down there than I do, people were saying, oh, no, get a hold of Tibbetts. He'll take those decks. And then, you know, when we need to get Ad Nauseam Tendrils training session online, you're going to provide us with the proxy deck for that. Or when we want Sneak and Show, or when we want Death and Taxes, you've already done the work to proxy that up. So this guy, I thought he was going to maybe give me 3-4 decks. He's written back to me and said, I have about 13 legacy decks and probably at least that many modern decks. And I'm thinking to myself, holy moly, somebody went through a whole lot of work to do this, and now they just want to entrust it to me. So I felt really good that that ambassadorship that I've kind of provided is kind of paying dividends. So I'm hoping to get those decks from him this weekend. And then, of course, to find some ways to train other people how to play against those decks and expand knowledge bases in modern and legacy. So that's what I did to get better this week, and hopefully in the next 6-12 months, perhaps.
Matt, what'd you do to get better this week?
When I was going through all the finance, I got to listen to a lot of our previous cast. I kind of realized we've been improving over time when I was listening. I got to say, it's just been an honor to actually do the cast. I'm looking forward to doing another 50, and then you guys can hear me blabber on about terrible decks I'm building.
Oh, terrible decks, maybe even terrible picks. You never know. We're looking forward to another retrospective in the elevator in 50 episodes. All right, we'll make it a date, episode 150. Oh, you brave soul. We hope you enjoyed episode 100, a celebration of friends and a celebration of the game we love as much as we did. We'll see you next week again here on Tryhard.